All right. Our meeting format calls for a guest speaker followed by open discussion. Our guest speaker will share for 30 to 45 minutes. At our speaker's discretion, we may invite questions from the audience for up to 10 minutes before we begin the discussion portion of our meeting. It is now my pleasure to introduce tonight's chair speaker, which is Kevin from Tulare.
I saw you. Hi, I'm Kevin, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
My sobriety date is January 27th, 06. And first of all, I'd like to welcome the two that introduced themselves as newcomers, Rosie, and then I think it was Tony online. Welcome to you guys. You know, with me and my alcoholism, alcohol was always accepted in my family, even from a very young age. You know, I grew up with a dad that drank on a regular basis. My mom didn't really drink much, but my dad was drinking on every day. You know, he was drinking just like I ended up drinking, and so it was always accepted. And you know, from the time we were young, it was kind of like, you know, if we wanted a beer, go ahead and have one. You know, we started out with drinking leftover dads or his friends and stuff, but then if we wanted a beer, even at eight years old, you know, go ahead and have one. Just, you know, you wasn't going to drink all dad's beer, though. You know, it's just got to the point where I remember we'd go to Little League Baseball. My dad was always my coach through Little League, Babe Ruth, everything. He's the only coach I ever had. And, you know, we'd be sitting there at 9, 10 years old practicing, and he would leave to go get sodas for the team and come back with beer because it was cheaper, you know, for 9, 10, 11-year-olds because it was cheaper. I remember still to today, the day, first time he brought it back, said, as long as beer is cheaper, you guys are going to drink it. And we did, you know, and the other kids did too, and the parents never said anything, so it was a different time. You know, and we did a lot of dumb things together as a family because of stuff like that, too. Even one night after one of those baseball games we were on it, I think I was 11 years old, and we would always go to pizza afterwards, you know, when we won especially. And we'd go to pizza, and my dad and his friend, who was the other coach, we'd sit there long after the other players would leave and their families and stuff, and they would sit there drinking one pitcher of beer after the other, and us kids would join in and drink it too. It wasn't really a thing where the owners of the pizza place would stop us from it, and we'd sit there right at the table and have beers. And I remember one night, my mom and dad weren't married anymore at this time, and my dad dropped me and my brother off at home, and we were pretty drunk. I was 11, he was 12. And I couldn't get to sleep. My brother had to kind of comfort me and tell me what to do when you're drunk and you've got the bed spins. Because he was 12. He was real experienced. So I did, and I fell asleep. And, you know, for some reason, that story's always stuck out in my head. But, you know, we all have drunk stories. We all know how to drink. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. You know, but one thing led to another, and my drinking started getting worse from a young age. Even in high school, we'd go out just like everybody else on weekends, and we'd drink as much beer as we could and then come home and go out and do it again the next day. You know, if we had leftover beers and my buddy would pick me up, they were still in his car, we'd drink them before school. You know, and I'm sure a lot of us could remember drinking those nice warm beers the next day. Towards the end, it actually, we maybe needed that nice warm beer. I know I did. But, you know, after high school, I moved away from home and moved in with an old guy I knew in another town. And I wasn't old enough to drink or get the beer, but he was. So we were out partying every night. We were adding other things to it, too. You know, and I'd let him stay in my little studio apartment, and he would get the beer and get the other party favors. And we'd party on a nightly basis all night until late night. And then, you know, we'd have a certain time where we'd say we're done, we'd go to sleep, and we'd wake up because we worked together the next morning. And, you know, just a lifestyle like that, I was already learning how to go further. But, you know, I was still having a lot of fun. You know, when we're young and we're drinking, most of us had a lot of fun with it. And we saw the fun. And, you know, we thought it was the alcohol that was giving us the fun. But like I talked the other night, that fun soon turned into fun with some problems. You know, all of a sudden my alcohol and my drinking wasn't just bringing all joy anymore. you know, there were some problems that came along with it. And it might have just been problems like I was spending too much and couldn't pay my bills. You know, it might have been problems with getting pulled over and not be able to get my way out of it. Or, you know, there was just wasn't as fun anymore. And eventually, you know, over time, we've all heard about how this disease is progressive and fatal. And, you know, over time, it got to the point where that fun just disappeared. You know, every time I drank, something wrong would happen. You know, if it was just getting in a fight with my ex-wife over drinking too much with my son or not doing what I said I was going to do, there was always problems with my drinking. You know, from a young age, I mean, in my 20s, I was drinking on a regular basis every day of the week. I was shortly after that where I would get up in the morning and have a drink because, you know, I heard a story about, hey, you know, leave half a beer on your nightstand so when you wake up with a hangover next morning, you can drink it and you'll get over that. You know, so I started doing stuff like that. But I was already far enough where once I had that one drink, I needed another one. You know, and I would progress to drink that morning drink, which was the old evil drink, you know. I always heard all my life, you're not an alcoholic if you don't drink before 5. And then it changed to, you're not an alcoholic if you don't drink before noon. Well, that noon came a lot earlier. And it was coming on every day. You know, this was down the line, but I would drink every morning when I woke up. I needed a drink just to get functioning. And even when it wasn't beer, when it turned to vodka, I would, in the morning, I'd get up and I'd make a drink. And I'd take it in the shower with me because I needed to have that drink. You know, I'd put it right up on that rail. You know, why else is that rail there, I figured. But I would take a drink in there because, you know, I really couldn't get my day going without it. I needed that in the morning. I'd even eventually got to the point where if I woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, I had to have a shot or a drink or something to put me to sleep, I thought. You know, it was my body telling me and my mind telling me, you need that drink and now's the perfect time. Let's have it. And I did. I even got kicked out of the place I was living, evicted. And here I am, 40 years old, thinking, you know what? What are you going to do? I have no family around here or anything. I'm 40 years old. I'm not working because I couldn't keep a job anymore. I didn't have a car because I couldn't pay my bills anymore. And, you know, at 40 years old, my ex-wife came and told me I could move back in with her. I'll tell you right now, I didn't like that woman. We had a bad divorce over custody of our child. You know, I thought I deserved a little more, and she didn't think I deserved anything. But, you know, I took that opportunity, and I went and lived with her. And I had to switch what I drank, and I started drinking, instead of vodka, I drank bourbon because I could hide it. You know, vodka for a lot of years was my friend. You know, we could all understand that. I would drink vodka, and I would start in the morning, and I could drink it all day, and I could maintain, and I could just stay there. The only problem was I couldn't get too far from that bottle. I used to work at night at one point, and my son would come and stay the days with me, and he'd always want to go do something. He was 5 to 8 years old. He'd always want to go do something during the day, and I couldn't leave the house because I couldn't leave my drink. It was that bad. We would play catch right out in front of the duplex we lived in, and my drink would be right inside that door in the little ledge. I could not leave. We had a pool at our place, and I can go back there, but I couldn't stay there too long because I had to come back in and refill that drink. I mean, life was miserable for me, and life was miserable for him at the time. I was not a responsible dad. I wasn't a responsible adult. You know, I would leave this little kid in the morning at 5 years old, even younger. I knew that I was going to be pretty drunk when I got to bed. So I would leave the door unlocked for when his mom dropped him over, he could come in because I knew there was no way I was going to be up at that hour to let him in. And I would leave a glass of milk and a banana half peeled in the refrigerator so he can get in there. Because one morning he came to me and he couldn't peel the banana. So I'd start leaving it half peeled so he could do it because I couldn't be disturbed. I couldn't get up to take care of that kid. And one morning he was in there and he had spilled the milk on the refrigerator or in the kitchen floor. And he was in there cleaning it up as a small kid, worried. And I got up and I, you know, what's going on and stuff. And he wanted to clean that up before I found out because he knew I was just going to yell at him or something. You know, I wasn't a dad. But I still wanted them as much as I could, and I think it was maybe so I didn't have to pay child support or something. But, you know, in my mind, I did want a relationship with them. I just couldn't have one. I couldn't bring myself to do the things that a dad needed to do. You know, but when I moved back in with that woman, he was 8 years old. He had just turned 8. And I switched to bourbon because my vodka, I needed to drink it cold. I was a little sissy, you know. So my bourbon, I could drink warm, though. So I'd keep a bottle in my dresser. And like I said, if I woke up in the middle of the night, I'd take a drink out of that and go back to sleep. But bourbon was doing something for me that vodka never did. You know, I could hear myself slurring all of a sudden. Vodka never did that to me. Vodka was my friend. You know, bourbon's not treating me right. I would start running into walls. You know, and I never did that. But it was just the progression of the alcohol. It didn't matter if it was summertime, wintertime, or whatever. If I left the house, I had to wear a coat so I could have an inside pocket where I could put that bottle in. And I remember my son asking me years later, or not asking, telling me years later, that he remembers one time we were getting on the city bus in Tulare, because I didn't have a car anymore. And before I could even walk back and take my seat, I had to kind of turn around and make sure he wasn't looking and pull that coat up and take a drink out of that bottle before I could take a seat. Because I was always thinking about how I can get that next drink, because I couldn't sit down and pull the bottle out because he'd be sitting right next to me. So I thought I was sneaking it. You know, kids see everything. Kids see everything. But I knew I had a problem. You know, I knew I needed to do something, but I was too worried to go do anything, because I thought, going through this divorce and trying to get more custody and this and that, I thought if I went into a rehab or anything like that, that she would use it against me in court to keep that kid away from me. So I never did. You know, in reality, I see now that if I would have done it, it would have helped all of us out. But I wouldn't do it. You know, I fought it and I wouldn't do it. But it doesn't mean I didn't try and quit drinking. You know, I would get up in the morning and say, okay, this is it. Or the night before, I'd say, okay, I'm quitting. Today's the last day. I'm not drinking anymore. You know, and I think most of us have probably done that. Well, the next day, you know, if I made it past noon, it would have been a miracle. You know, I'm not going to drink forever, but here by noon, I'm already drinking, or 2 o'clock or whatever. So I was bartending at a place, and I heard of this another guy that, you know, and I thought the guy was as bad as me, if not worse. And he said every year after Super Bowl, he quits drinking for a month. So I thought, well, shit, if he could do it, I could do that. Super Bowl was coming up, so after Super Bowl, I quit. I'm going to quit for a month. Same thing. You know, I couldn't make it the day. I tried February. February's short, right? You got to be able to make it through February. Couldn't make it a day. You know, I tried quitting lots of times. Never made it. And when I came into this program, I would have swore to you that I never tried quitting. Because I did quit trying, and I didn't remember ever trying those. You know, as we get sober and more things are revealed to you, you start remembering all this stuff. I had blanked this out. You know, I knew I couldn't quit, so I just quit quitting. And then everything's okay. You know, I'm all right. But I'll tell you, it got so bad that when I was living with my ex-wife, I remember lying about everything. You know, if somebody said something, I did that better, and I'd lie about it. It didn't matter what it was. But I'd also lie about other things, you know, like everybody knew I had a drinking problem, everybody except for me. And I didn't want to hear people talk about it. So I remember one night we were talking about it, and I told her and her mom I hadn't drank in 14 days. I think I was drinking 14 minutes before. But I remember saying, I haven't had a drink in 14 days. And it was that night I left and I went down the street and I got a bottle of whiskey and a pack of cigarettes. And in Tulare, if you guys know about Tulare, they have the trail in Tulare. Well, right there by where the old folks' home is now, I went over there one night and I sat on a bench. And I started drinking that bottle and smoking cigarettes and, you know, thinking about life. That's what I did a lot, you know, when I was drinking. I thought about life. I could solve everything. But I started thinking about where I was. And, you know, I was in one of those moods where I'm feeling sorry for myself and I need to quit drinking and how am I going to do it and stuff. And I think I drank about half that bottle and just decided right then, I said, right now's the time. It's over. You know, I just lied about 14 days. Let's do it. Let's make it a reality. And I took that bottle and I threw it over in the tall grass, took my cigarettes, threw them. I said, if I'm going to quit drinking, might as well quit smoking. And I threw them there. I went back to my ex-wife's house. She just lived right there. And I sat there, and I can't remember what we were doing or what I was doing, probably trying to spend some time with my son, playing with him, being fake or something. But, you know, it wasn't a half hour later before that was working on me so much that I left that house. I went over by that trail, and I was crawling around in that grass looking for that bottle and looking for those cigarettes. And I found them. I found them, and I proceeded to drink and smoke and, you know, still thinking about things. And when I finished, I was heading home, and there's a church right there by the house. And I saw some action going on in the church. It was nighttime. I can't remember what night of the week it was, but there was some action going on in the church. So I decided, you know what, maybe if I go talk to a pastor, maybe this would help. And I remember walking in that church and sitting in the back of the congregation and looked around. There's no pastor up there, so I finally asked somebody, you know, hey, is the pastor around? And she told me it was a PTA meeting. It wasn't even church. But you know what? I didn't stop there. I asked if the pastor was there, and she said, yes, but he's in a class, and he can't be disturbed right now. And I said, you know what? I really got to see him. I have to talk to him. Is there any way? And she walked me over to him, walked me out of the church, and walked back to one of the classrooms and asked me to stay there. And she went in and got him, and he came out, and, you know, I started telling him about my problem a little bit, and I just busted down crying. I don't know where it came from, but I busted down, man. I was telling him I have a drinking problem, and I need to quit, and I don't know what to do. And, you know, he told me that he had some people, he knew some people that might be able to help me, and that he had to get back to this class he was teaching, and he took my name and number, and you know, we went our separate ways. And I didn't hear from that guy for a little while, and I didn't think about it. But, you know, I had heard enough stuff, and I did enough stuff. I caused a fight one night so I could leave. I just got enough money, an unemployment check or something. I was going to go get a hotel room, and, you know, where nobody could bitch and yell at me about drinking. I could do what I wanted to. And I remember going to that hotel that night and drinking as much as I could and falling asleep, passing out, whatever we call it. And, you know, woke up in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden, we've all felt it. Everything hits you. What'd you do? What are you going to do now? That one place where you're living, you don't have that anymore. You're going to get kicked out. What are you going to do? So I don't know why AA popped up in my head. I had never been to an AA meeting, never thought about AA, but AA popped in my head sitting in that hotel room. And I went over to that phone book, and I looked up the number for AA, and I called. And it was a Thursday night in Tulare, and the person at the other end of that phone told me there was a meeting coming up Saturday. They didn't tell me about one Friday. I guess on the schedule they were looking at, didn't have one. But they said there was one on Saturday and told me where it was. And for some reason, I kind of took notes. Now, I was always pretty good in school, so I kind of took notes. And after we hung up, I went back to my drinking, went to sleep, and woke up that next morning feeling that same thing. You know, you screwed up. Where are you going to go? Are you going to move back with your mommy at 41 years old now? And that's the way I felt. And I looked over and seen those notes I jotted down, and everything came back to me, you know, that I called AA, and I wrote down or read where the meeting was. It was the next day now, and the address. And I thought, I have to do it. I have to go to a meeting of AA. So I had three beers left, and I kind of drank those and walked back to her house. Sat down thinking, okay, the meeting's not till tomorrow. You know, it's like 10, 11 o'clock in the morning on a Friday. The meeting's not till 8 o'clock Saturday. You know, I thought, I got to do it. And I remember sitting down at her kitchen table and writing a note about how I was going to quit drinking, how I was going to do it. I was going to go to this AA meeting. I never thought about a second meeting. You know, I didn't know. I didn't know anything, so I'm going to go to this meeting and start. And, you know, I made that promise to her just like I did probably 1,000 times when we were married. I didn't mean it any more this time because I meant it every single time I made that promise that I was going to quit drinking. But something about this time, I actually followed through and did something about it. And I had just had hernia surgery like 2 weeks before. I wasn't even supposed to be, you know, out of the house or anything. But I'm walking around because I had to do it. I had to go get my bottle every day or twice a day. And, you know, I remember getting up after writing that meeting and walking over to see where this meeting's going to be. And I walked across town and I stopped at a store and got a beer. And it was right there at the tracks. And I drank that beer real quick and threw it down, the bottle down on the tracks. And I proceeded to walk down to this church where the meeting was going to be, just so I'd be prepared the next day. And I found out where it was. And some guy was out there, probably a maintenance guy or pastor or somebody. And I told him, I hear there's an AA meeting here. I didn't know that the church in AA had nothing to do, you know, weren't the same people. I just thought he was part of the AA meeting. So I asked about it, and he acted like, yeah, I think there's a sign over there or something. And I'm thinking, yeah, doesn't the guy know? So, you know, I found out where it was, and I proceeded back to her house, and I stopped and got one more beer at another store by the tracks, a different one. And I drank that and threw a bottle down again. And I'm almost home, and all I could think about at this point, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. All I could think about is, I'm out of beer, I'm out of cigarettes. It might have been noon. And I was going to the liquor store that I always went to. And I was going to get some. And for some reason, I said, you know what? It's time to start right now. And I walked home. And I sat there in bed. And everybody got home. And, you know, we didn't really talk too much that night. Everybody was fighting, you know, because of me, again. And I'll tell you what, I thought about that meeting and I thought about it and I thought, you know, what am I going to do between now and then not to have a drink? And I just kind of white-knuckled it. I had never made it a day. Remember my stories trying to quit? And I look back, I don't think I made it a day in 15 years before I came into an AA meeting. But there I had to. I'm home with her. I didn't prepare myself with booze for that night. So I had to sit there without it. And I'll tell you what, I told her, we talked a little bit about what I was going to do. I was going to go to that meeting the next night, and they were going to leave town and stuff. And for some reason, they didn't leave town, and she drove me to that meeting. And I'll tell you what, it was about 30 hours since I had my last beer. It was the longest 30 hours of my life. I mean, I was going nuts. I was going nuts. And, you know, I walked into that meeting. She dropped me off, and I walked in, and kind of the same thing I did to that man that was at the church. You know, I walk up, and yeah, I heard this is an open meeting, is what I said that time. That's what they told me on the phone. I heard this is an open meeting. The secretary just looked at me like, yeah, okay. You know, like, you know, in other words, I'm saying, I'm here. Don't you know who I am? And she told me to sit down, and I sat down, and she brought me over a paper, said, can you read this? And it was chapter 9 that they read at the end of the meeting. And all I could think about is, why did she do this? You know, I'm scared already. I don't know what you guys do at these meetings. I'm scared. And I've said this before. As far as I knew, you guys hooked electrodes up to me. I had no idea what to expect. I'm scared. And now she gives me this paper to read. I wasn't that good of a reader. You know, so as people were talking during that meeting, I was studying this little thing. But I'm still listening to what people were talking about. And they were all talking about where I was at that time. I tell you, the theme of that meeting was how broke everybody was when they came in. I still remember that. And I remember that basket coming around, and I didn't have a dollar to put in it. They talked about this book afterwards. They would sell it to us at cost, and we need one. That book, I think, at our cost at that time was $6.85, and I couldn't buy one. A friend of mine bought me one a few days later down at the bookstore. But you know what? I went to that meeting, and I listened. And when she picked me up afterwards, she asked me how I liked it. And I told her. I said, you know what? I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good listening to everybody. But for some reason, the next words came out of my mouth weren't expected and said, but I don't think one's going to do it. And see, my plan was just go to one, man. I'm done. I heard other people tell stories. They went down. They said, oh, there's a waiting line. So if I would have thought of that, I wouldn't even went to the one. But I wasn't going to do it. So you know what? We went home, and the next day that pastor called me. There were 2 weeks before. And he told me he had this guy that he wanted me to talk to. And I went down and talked to that guy. He wanted me to go to a different program. It was Celebrate Recovery. you know, I had already talked to some people in sober recovery at the church I went to, and I had already told them I was going to go, you know, after I went to that one meeting. I wouldn't talk to that guy anyway, but, you know, I thought I was going to go to it, and I had her drive me over to that meeting on the Monday night, because it was a Monday night meeting in Tulare, and I said, you know what, I've already been to an AA meeting, I'm going to go to AA some more. I'd been to two meetings by then, and I said, I'm going to go to AA, let's just not do this, and I didn't, which I did go to the program later, but, you know, come Monday, I got on the bus, and I put my bike on the bus, and I brought it over here to Visalia, and I went to the Lano Club, and I did that every day, Monday through Friday for the next month. I stood up every day and introduced myself as a newcomer. And then I would sit there and try not to talk to you because I didn't want you to notice me. Every day. Like I'm starving for attention. I want you to notice me, but I don't want to be the one to ask for it. And after the meeting, I'd get my bike and leave. Well, one guy started talking to me. And, you know, I came up with this plan. Again, you know, one meeting. Plan didn't work. I came up with another plan. Let's give this a shot for 3 months. You know, I had a couple of days in me now. Said, let's give it 3 months. I don't know if it was to prove to myself I could do it or just shut everybody else up. But I was going to come around here for 3 months. And this one guy named Gary, he started talking to me after the meeting and, you know, asked me questions. And I just felt so uncomfortable. I didn't want to talk to him. I didn't want to be around anybody. I felt uncomfortable. And I remember him asking me one day if I had a loving God or a punishing God. I didn't even know the answer. You know, and I left. And remember walking back into that meeting. I had 21 days sober. I had this lit because, you know, I had sat there in that Alano Club and sit over on the right and I'd read the steps. I'd read number one in my mind. Okay, I've done that. That was done. Check it off the box. I'd read number two. My mind, okay, done that. Let's slow down. I don't want to do them all too fast. Next day I do number three. Okay, I can do that. Well, eventually it gets to a point where you have to talk to somebody else. I wasn't ready for that yet, so I stopped. But I remember having 21 days sober, and I had everybody kind of buffalo. Where this one guy? And he was the secretary of that meeting, and he asked me if I'd chair it at the Lano Club. And I said, sure. I thought I knew this whole program. And, you know, I went up there and I talked for how long you talk at Lano Club, not knowing a damn thing, but acting like I knew everything. And I thought I did. After that meeting, after I talked, I thought, you know what, you probably didn't make any sense in the world. And because I tried hiding so long, when it came to calling people, I didn't know his name. I knew Holden. I knew Holden's name. Just because he went up there and talked just about every day. And I remember calling on him because Gary said, Holden's always good for somebody to talk to. Because in a lot of clubs, it's hard to find somebody to get up there that'll share, too. But you know what? After going to the Lano Club for a month, I started going back to Tulare. I started going to the night meetings. And that's where I opened up and I started talking to people and started meeting people. And there was this one guy for the next month. He would come and pick me up because I was riding a bike to meetings. He would start picking me up and taking me to meetings. I think one time he even brought me to a meeting in Visalia. And he would show up at my house during the day when he wasn't working. I got a job after a month, and he would show up to my work. And all I could think is, man, why does this guy keep following me around? Why didn't he leave me alone? But, you know, he was trying to help me. He was trying to help me. I just was too close-minded to see it. You know, but one night we were driving over to Visalia and he was talking to me and he was telling me the same thing I'd heard him say in meetings about how he only had 6 months more than me. And he was telling me when he went into Alcoholics Anonymous where his life was, and it was very similar to mine. You know, nobody wanted to be around him. His wife was about ready to leave. Mine already left, but his wife was about ready to leave. His kids didn't want to talk to him. And, you know, he went to AA. And in only the 6 months he had been around, he was telling me how much better his life got. And I started thinking, man, only 6 months and he's already to where he is now. And I thought his life was great compared to mine. I thought it was great. So it was the next night we went to a Saturday night meeting in Tulare, the same meeting I went to for my original meeting. And I was sitting there thinking to myself before and talking to the guys, and, you know, something came over my mind. I said, you know what? This is what I want. I'm starting to like my life, and I want it to be more like his. I want to quit drinking. I don't want to drink anymore. I want to be like these other people that are getting their lives back. And right there at that meeting, I abandoned that 30 or 90-day plan I had and decided this is what I wanted. And I remember getting a sponsor. That night, I started talking to people about sponsorship. And I got a sponsor, and I met with that sponsor a couple of days later. And we started right into the steps. You know, those fake steps that I did before? We started doing them for real. And we worked through those steps pretty rapidly. You know, I met with him on a daily basis almost because, you know, I wasn't working much and he wasn't really working. And we met on a daily basis almost, and we worked through them pretty rapidly. And just like I said the other day, he knew I had to go through them like that because I'm the type of guy that if I don't start seeing change, you probably won't see me. You know, hey, this ain't working. You know, I give it 2 days and this ain't working, so let's just try something else. Let's go back out. But you know what? It started working. And I started seeing change in other people. You know, my ex-wife, I was riding my bike to a meeting one night right after I was worked about halfway through the steps. And she called me on my way to a meeting and asked me if I saw the $20 that my son had in a box under her bed. I said no. And you know, I'm thinking right away, bullshit, she's going to blame me for this. And it's probably the first time I didn't take the money. You know, because I'd go down there and take his change and stuff. But I didn't take it that time. And she acted like she believed me. And it kind of freaked me out a little bit. You know, she believed me. Because she didn't yell at me. She didn't call me a liar. She didn't do anything like we normally would. And you know what? I started seeing a little bit, man. People are changing. You know, in reality, it was me changing. People change when we change. People treat you like you treat them a lot of times. You know, if you're going to treat somebody like shit, they're going to treat you back like shit eventually. And that's what was happening with me. You know, and I worked through those steps with that sponsor, and I'll tell you what, my life got better. You know, when I came into this program, I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have a car. When I did have a car, I didn't have it registered or insured because I didn't have a license. Why have the rest? That was my mentality. You know, eventually I bought a car. I remember buying a car for $500 from somebody in the program to get me around. I remember it didn't have handles on it. They were all broke, inside and out. I remember going to the junkyard and getting some handles. And they ordered me some new ones, too. And I had handles. I can get in with this without leaving the windows down all the time. I was high class. But you know what? That car got me to meetings. It got me to new meetings. I got to meet new people. Eventually, there was one lady in Tulare that formed a little group of people. And we started doing things outside of AA. We started going to her house and having barbecues with people in AA. We started going to the movie together and watching movies with people in AA. We started going to dinner, you know, not after a meeting, just, you know, calling each other and, hey, let's go to dinner tonight with AA people out of AA. And I'll tell you what, no matter how good my sobriety was getting at that time, that improved it. Getting together with people like us that are sober outside of the program helped me tremendously. My sobriety at that time just kind of soared. You know, and I had a car. I had a job. I had a job where I could get off early enough to go to meetings. You know, I talked to people. I worked the steps, and I'll tell you what, my life got better. My life got a lot better. When I came in here, I thought, you know, just if I can get a car, if I can get my license back. You know, I never got a drunk driving. I just lost my license because I wasn't paying my tickets. I didn't have a drunk driving because I just never really drove. Or, you know, I was lucky. But I just wanted a car. I wanted a license. I wanted a good job. I always wanted a better job. And that's why I was drinking or whatever, you know, excuse after excuse. But, you know, eventually I did. I got that little car. I got a job. I bought a better car. You know, I got a better job. You know, I just kept progressing, just like my alcohol did. Now my life was just progressing for the better. And I say this all the time, though. You know, if I look back and see what I wanted at that time and where what I have now, my life is a dream. You know, since I got sober, I've bought a house. I have two cars. They're both insured. They're both registered. And I have a license to drive them.
That's right.
You know, my bills are paid. I have a job where I show up every day. I show up to that job every day and on time. You know, I don't think I've been late for any job since I got sober. You guys in here have taught me how to be a responsible person. And it all started for going to that first meeting that I didn't want to be at and forcing myself to go. For whatever reason I went, it was the right decision, and I went to it. I'm so grateful today for going and sticking around and having friends like Bob and Bill came tonight. We do things outside of the program. We go golfing a lot together. We go races together. We do a lot of stuff outside the program. And it helps people like me and probably them too to see people. And, you know, through COVID, I quit going to meetings. But I had guys like that to keep me going. I got a girlfriend at that time, and we'd go out quite a bit. And she used to like to drink. And we'd go out to dinner, and she would have one drink after the other of wine. You know, sophisticated drinker like I thought I was, a bourbon. But, you know, I came that close to having a glass of wine with her one time. And I thought, I got to end this. And that's when I started going back to meetings. I think me and Bob went to a Friday night meeting that week or something. Because I had distanced myself from meetings during COVID. I didn't even know they had meetings still going on. And it taught me, just going to that one restaurant and almost having that one drink, taught me that I can't go without the meetings. Because I could have easily had that drink and I wouldn't be where I am today. I could have lost everything that I've worked the last 17 years to gain. Thank God I have enough AA in me to say no to that and to come back where I belong. So I tell you, if anybody in here is not sure about what they want to do, do just like I did. You know, stick around, come to meetings, and see if it happens. Because with me, we always hear, come to meetings until the miracle happens. I'm living proof, man. I just told my story about 2 months into it, that miracle happened to me. I'm not living my plan at all, for sure. If I lived my plan after 30 days, I would have been drinking because I already knew where I was going to keep my booze and what cabinet they were going to be in a house I didn't even have. I had visions of being right by the sink and my booze being right up here. I didn't even have a house. I was living with my ex-wife. But I made that decision to abandon my plan. I'm glad I did. Thanks for listening to me. Thanks for that.
Okay, our speaker has graciously agreed to entertain a few questions. Let's please focus these questions on how the speaker's experience might enhance our recovery. And we have about 10 minutes to allot for that. Anybody have a question?
There's one over here.
Feel free to speak.
Has there been anything in your recovery that's blocked your contact with God? And if so, how did you work through that?
Has there been anything in my recovery that's blocked my contact with God? You know, in my story, I was telling you about how I stopped going to meetings during COVID. Once I stopped going to meetings, I kind of stopped doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous too, you know, even at home. And I stopped doing my praying as much. You know, I still would kind of wake up and think I need to talk to God, but it wasn't like it was on a daily basis. And you heard my story on where that led to. You know, it came pretty close to drinking. So when I got back into meetings, I found that God again, too. So, yeah, I had distanced myself. But thank God, not too far. Anybody else? That was a quick 10 minutes.
Yeah.
How long did it take me to work all 12 steps? I was done with them within 6 months. You know, at the time I had a sponsor. He was actually, I met him in Celebrate Recovery. And when I asked to be my sponsor, we talked a little bit. And We started working that program and decided I need the steps of AA because they work a lot quicker, because I'm kind of need a little bit more help. And I did them. I wasn't working. So we would meet almost on a daily basis. We'd go from one to the other. And I did a lot of writing. I did a lot of thinking. And we did them pretty quick. I'm not the one that lasted 2 years or 5 years or whatever. And I'm glad I did, because that sponsor kind of, if I would have taken much longer, I wouldn't have had him anymore, because he got himself in some trouble and wasn't around anymore. That's a good question.
I got a question. You said you had an SO that would like to drink. How supportive was your SO with your recovery? Your significant other?
My significant other liked to drink. Significant. You know, at first, when we started going out, it didn't bother me. You know, it was COVID had already started, and I hadn't gotten to a meeting in a while, but it didn't bother me. And she didn't live in town, so we'd get together at least once a week. But I noticed the more I was going over there, she was drinking from the time I got there to the time I left. And she was telling me, hey, I haven't drank in 9 days, so you're here. It's time to celebrate. And I could think, well, it's time to celebrate with somebody that doesn't drink? And it bothered me. It bothered me. We'd go out of town or something, and we couldn't. It reminded me when I was drinking that I couldn't do the stuff I wanted because we had to go from one drink to the other, and it bothered me. And I kind of was in a dream that I thought I should be with her, and I almost had that drink, so I ended up leaving that relationship. But, yeah, it bothered me when she was drinking. Maybe if I was prepared for it, if I had somebody already, but it might have been different, but this would bother me. Thanks for asking that. Yeah, Bob. When am I going to stop lying on the golf course? You know what? There's character defects that you just get rid of. And maybe that's when I'm not ready to get rid of yet, as long as you keep paying me. There's the lady behind me first.
Are you also tobacco-free too?
Am I tobacco-free too? I quit smoking the day I quit drinking. It was about 6 months after that I started smoking again. And, you know, I was working, and I asked a guy for a cigarette one day that I worked with. The next day I asked him for another one. The next day I bought a pack. So I believe it helped me with my drinking, because I realized how easy it was to start that back up again. And I always relate that back to my alcoholism, how easy it would be to start that back up. Yeah. I'll tell you, though, I prayed to God every day. I heard this from another guy in the program. He said, if you want to quit, pray to God. And I prayed to God every day, and all I said is, if you want me to quit, take away the urge. And I'll tell you what, God put this date in my mind. It was March 22nd. I'll never forget it. He put that date in my mind, and I kept thinking and thinking, what the hell's with this date? Why do I keep thinking this date? And I looked on the calendar, and it was Sunday. And I thought, God wants me to quit smoking that day.
The anniversary is coming up.
Congratulations. Yes, so I quit that night at midnight. I fell asleep and woke up at a quarter of midnight, so I smoked a cigarette, crumpled the rest. But I'll tell you what, I know it was God, because the next 4 days at work, I worked with two people that smoked, and they both called in sick the next 4 days, and I didn't tell a soul that I was going to quit smoking. So God helped me with that. And every time I won one, I just asked God to take away the urge, and he did.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So before you came to AA, did you already feel that you believed in God, or did you come to it?
Before I came to AA, did I believe in God? I did. I believed in God. I was raised in a church, so I always had God in my life. When I came to AA, my God changed. I was raised with a punishing God. And in AA, I adopted a loving God. But I never quit believing in God when I was out there. Even before I came, I was getting back in a church, and that's how I hooked up with the Celebrate Recovery that one time, because I was going to a church in Exeter that was starting a program, and I was starting to get to know the people in the church and trying to get involved before I met AA. So I was trying to get involved. I was trying to help myself in a different way. So, yeah, I never quit believing in God. Just didn't talk to him as much. Thanks. Yes.
How does the
a newfound freedom apply to your life?
How does a newfound freedom apply to my life?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, that's hard to explain because the freedom's everything to me now. When I was drinking, I was a prisoner. I was a prisoner to my bottle. I told you the story about it. I could only go out front to play catch with my son. I couldn't leave that bottle. If we did leave the house, it was to walk to the store to get a bottle. I was a prisoner to that bottle at home. Now I could go out and I could do what I want, and I'm free to do what I want to do. I could walk down that liquor aisle at the store now without even thinking about it. And that was a hard time at first, And I think we could all relate to that. We were prisoners to that bottle. Today I'm not. I hope that answered your question. Thanks for that.